This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, welcome to the radio show. It's Aaron Norris this time interviewing Bruce Norris. We are actually continuing our journey on adding to our investor series online. And one of the things we didn't do during the buying systems when we recorded it back in 2006 was talk about how buying strategies change depending on what quadrant we're in. And if you're not familiar with quadrants, there's four of them, and we're going to talk about those as we go along. So welcome, Dad slash Bruce. One of my favorite chats of all times that you did was the stay put, cash out, or change seats. And I just wanted to talk about that real quickly to frame all this, because I think this is my first full cycle, and it's been interesting to watch different people at different levels, and everybody's strategizing differently. Mm-hmm. So you're in a very different place than I am right now. I'm more aggressive. You just don't want to screw up what you've been able to create over time. So let's chat real quick about staying put. Why right now would it be a good idea to stay put?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people know who Mike Cantu is. So Mike Cantu, in the peak of the market 2006, after going to hear a report that had the word crash in it, had already made a decision. He wasn't selling anything. He was staying put. Then prices go down by, say, 40%, where he's, you know, really owned most of his stuff. And he didn't lose a night's sleep. And he could have cared less. And why? Because it wasn't why he owned it. Mm. He stayed put because he still got his rental check. And to this day, if he sold any of that, he's probably improved the location because he's doing some in the beach areas now. But his strategy was different. Now, Tony Alvarez, was going to sell them early. He talked to me and he kept them for a couple of 3 years more. And he exited predominantly all of his holdings because he did not want those long-term rentals. He didn't. And the difference was, part of it was where the inventory was. Mm-hmm. Lancaster wasn't an exciting place to have rentals. It had challenges. It had challenging tenants with a lot of movement and a poorer, probably, income, wealth, and all that stuff, where a Rancho Cucamonga renter probably is much more stable and a more of a joy to own. It was like a location property type thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and then age comes into play. So here I am, you know, we're about at 65, and I'm going to stay put and intentionally built rentals that were really a prototype of what I've learned from Mike Cantu. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you own? You own a 3,000 square foot and two story? No. You own pretty boring stuff, single story, brick house, you know, and it's built like, it's
built
a bunker,
yeah,
bunker, and it's single story and it's under 2000 square feet. So I created my own little area of those. And so it has to do with a lot of different things, partly your cycle of life and part of the inventory that you have. And there's some people like Rick Solis. Now, Rick Solis just sold all of his stuff. He's as happy as a clam. It's what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So he didn't want to have. He had 50 rentals that drove him nuts for 5 years, made him a wealthy guy, wealthy where he doesn't have to work. Mm-hmm. He's floating around. He's probably going to, you know, he'll probably enter the fray here and there. But for the time being, he's having a ball. So I guess you kind of go through this. You have to go through a hard phase, which he was always willing to do, which Mike Cantu was willing to do, and Tony Alvarez and myself. We went through stuff where it was hard, and then you got somewhere. And a lot of times people don't know how to wrap that up and make it more permanent. You know, that's part of it.
Right.
So staying put means that you probably have paid that debt off, you know, and where it's not, there's not an urgency. Gosh, I've had those people sit in front of me with a list of properties and they're worth $3 million. And if you don't sell it within the next 6 months, you're going to be worth minus $3 million. I mean, honestly,
yeah,
you know, that's not the same position as Mike Cantu. Mm-hmm. Mike Cantu is like, I don't owe anything. So who cares? Am I going to get about the same rent even in a downturn? Yeah. And so that's what's fun about that presentation. It wasn't like there was one right answer.
I know. I'm trying to get you to bring it back because I think it's a lot of the questions right now I get is just like, should I sell at the time? And I'm like, well, it's such a personal decision right now.
Yeah. And you know, that's the hardest thing when people do right at the seminar, at the end of a talk at the club or whatever, they'll come in and give you a personal soundbite where you really, you know, you can't make a decision for them unless you had a broader scope of, you know, tell me what it is you want to accomplish. How did you get to the point you're here and all those things, you know?
Yeah.
Part of it is the makeup. I think like Rick Solis, for instance, he wanted this calm cycle. Tony Alvarez didn't necessarily want a calm cycle. He likes this.
He likes the real estate.
He likes it. Yeah. It's just,
so does Mike Cantu.
Yeah. He just does it in a different way. But, I think for Rick, and we've talked about this, that, and Rick and I are very similar. It was a means to an end.
Right.
Okay. And for Tony and Mike, it's an ongoing business
venture. It's a way of life.
It's a way of life. Yeah. It's sort of like a fix. Oh, I got a deal, you know, and it's, hey, I've been there. I just, you know, I guess my fix is what we do now,
mm-hmm.
you know, the education side and figuring out the charts and the cycles and all that stuff. I've actually decided to do that for Florida, by the way. I'm going to take a look at all that stuff.
I love how you're dropping that now on the radio show. This is the first time I've heard that, by the way.
Well, that's like saying I'm going to lose a bunch of weight. I've committed to do it. I want to figure that out. I want to take a look at Florida and see if it's something I can figure out.
Okay.
Because we are going to be there as a lender. So I feel like I want to do that for the safety of our person putting up money for trust deeds, and also
sure.
for the people we talk to in front of those audiences. Say, yeah, you guys have cycles. Or what if they don't? Well, I'll find that out too.
Well, they might have a new cycle. We'll get there.
Okay.
I talked to Alex while he was out for your birthday and had an interesting conversation after the hurricane in Puerto Rico.
Sure.
They've had a huge influx
of migration.
In central Florida, though,
yeah.
specifically. So
yep.
Maxing out the system, school system, housing. Anyway, we'll get there. So we're talking about stay push and cash out and change seats. I think some people, when they immediately hear the change seats, that it meant 1031 exchange, but that was covered more under the cash out, where change sheets was just, you sort of covered it as changing inventory. And
well, I mean, let's say the building we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I went from cashing out to in California mm-hmm. and some of it went to a 1031 exchange to Texas and Arkansas.
Right.
Okay. The seat change came from when I decided I wanted a commercial building and I sold some houses in Texas. Not necessarily caring about a profit motive. Profit motive was here. This went from 950 grand to 318.
Right.
So the profit motive was, where do I get the money to buy this at a third of the price?
Right.
So that's the changing seats. I changed from residential rental to commercial occupancy. So that's part of what we can do. And also the location change. I went from California out to Texas, back to here. And it only took a few years. So we rented for 4 years. So that was a journey for 4 years. A well worthwhile one though.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted, before we sort of talked about the quadrants, to sort of frame that, because we're all in different spots. Tax wise, the industry means different things for different peoples. It is a way of life for some, and they just get really excited about the game of real estate. And then I'm working with people now that are taking a 3-year sabbatical and
yeah.
touring the world because real estate has done what it is that they wanted it to do.
Right.
So it's pretty fun. All right. Well, buying system 23 is buying out of state. It sounds really sexy. And in the chapter itself, it really talks about the how-to piece and how not to get yourself in trouble. But real quick, one of the good questions that came up during a newsletter recently was, where do you get data? Where do you go? How are you searching where likely spots would be to make a profitable changing of a seat?
I guess I would start with a migration. Honestly, I would want an area, a state that's probably going to grow at a faster clip than other places.
Okay, so the government data has that, but it sort of is not very, typically not very current. So
correct, you'd always have a lag on anything to do with migration. I guess you could, you know, short term, you can play with the U-Haul idea and say, what, you know, where's the higher price?
Still works.
Okay, it does.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not downplaying it. It just so happened that when I used it, it was such a stark difference. It was crazy. It was like 10 times.
It still can be.
It can be. Okay.
If you're listening, you've never tried it before, you just go to a moving site and you price a truck to and from the same city. So say from Riverside to Texas and then Texas and back. And the theory is if it's higher going one way, it means that you have more migration coming into that city, and they're having to pay somebody to drive the truck out to the city that's less slow so they can come back in.
Yeah. At the time, let's say, when I was really interested in building out Rosamond, Lancaster was the number one destination city in the whole country.
That is really weird.
And a U-Haul, like from Texas to Lancaster, was $200, and the reverse trip was $2,000, 10 times. And you're just like, what?
Why?
It's the same distance.
Well, that's a really good segue into, let's talk about the quadrants. So there's four quadrants, and quadrant one is moving from a hot market to a flat market. So we're talking about, you know, would you say, I always forget the years, is it 2005 to 2007? Do you think that would be?
No, I mean, quadrant four really pushed itself into the late 2006.
Okay.
It shouldn't have, but it did. 2007, you started to have cracks in the foundation, and by quadrant one's short.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there it was really short, because it was like, oh, and just, so you went from quadrant four to quadrant two in 6 months. It was like, uh-oh.
Wow. Okay.
It was uh-oh. It really was.
So right. Depending on what kind of project you have a very short time frame. And so you better know quadrant one is coming.
Well, and that's why we created the selling system. Okay. What type of inventory should you not even be approaching the end of quadrant four with? Land, studio condos, $2 million spec homes.
Condo hotels, remember those?
Yeah, stuff like that. You're taking too big a risk, okay? So quadrant two is when it's going to get obviously not good, and it can go not good like the 80s or the 90s or 2008 to 2010, where it just is a crash.
So in quadrant one, so when you're about to hit the down cycle, you probably sort of almost want to be out, unless you're really testing your luck.
No, so yeah, you should be gone. That's
in your version
idea.
Of quadrant one, we'll loop back around to quadrant four, the last time you were in Rosamond, but these were maybe when you were working with Elite Auctions and auctioning off your final houses of the Rosamond project.
Yeah, that was like 2005.
Okay, that's fair enough. So it's hopefully by this time you're almost out, if not out entirely.
Right. We were 88 out of 93 out.
And you had really already researched a lot of markets. I remember that was one of the exciting things about California crash. It was two full days. It was a huge book. And you had identified markets that were typically counter-cyclical to California. So the goal was not necessarily thinking it was going to go up, but you were moving into markets where you could hide.
That's right. The whole goal for going to Texas was not for Texas to go up, but for us to be able to hide and leave with approximately the same money. I mean, honestly, because I think the value was going to be, we're going to come back to our home state and buy something at a big discount. And that is what occurred.
Okay. So quadrant two, flat market to a bust market. So what years do you say that would probably cover quadrant two?
That was 91 through 96. Okay. It was 2007, 8, 9.
Okay, that's what I had.
I mean, and it's even, you know, it got past that too, because you didn't have any big upside. You had a pretty flat market even beyond to probably 2011, 2012. Whenever we wrote All In or Fold, that was really the bottom had stabilized. We were done with the bonus chips for $8,000 for you to buy one.
Right.
And the bottom was real at that point, and it took off after that. So that was the ugliest in California, the ugliest downside ever seen. I saw a worse one in Grand Junction.
Oh, that's right.
So quadrant two sometimes can be made up of an economic problem that's local. That was the 90s for California. We had the bases closed, a lot of migration out. That was a different reason than 2009, 10, and so forth. That was national cyclical. I mean, that was national systemic stuff. Grand Junction was oil shale business left. So there can be all kinds of reasons for those types of opportunities where you could have an isolated quadrant two event in an area. So
right.
Those are kind of neat because, you know, you didn't get hit by it. You weren't there.
Right.
If it's in another state. So, but anyway, quadrant two can be really painful. You know, where the leverage you have multiplies all of a sudden, where it matters that you owe 50%. I mean, if you were in California and Riverside and you owed 50% on something in 2006, feeling great, by 2009, you owed 100%.
Right. And you don't have many exit strategies.
There aren't much.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah. And I mean, hopefully you've already sort of exited into other states and you're just sort of sitting pretty waiting at this point.
Yeah,
From the California investor's perspective, quadrant two is really just letting the market settle, trying to find your way back in because the strategy has totally changed too. In a down market, I mean, you have REO agents who became a thing for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, that's about how long it takes. You know, that's one, like some of the people that we dealt with will actually have retired, but they were around in the 90s. So when that happened, you know, in the 90s, and then it happened in 2008, those same people were calling us up going, "Are you still a buyer?" Because here we go again. You know, we're all started up. So I think California has pretty profound cycles. You know, if you go to Texas and you see a chart, and that's why you have to go to every state and look at the charts without a preconceived notion is I know how it works in California, so it's got to be the work. It doesn't. So you have to be honest and say, I don't know beans about Florida, to be honest with you. I got to take a look at a 30-year price chart and look at 30 years of migration and 30 years of affordability and 30 years of construction and on and on and on. And without playing any games that I'm all knowing, start from scratch and go, this is going to tell me a very different story. And the story may be there is no story. That's the oddest thing. You know, you may just say, okay, the only reason you ever had a big downturn was a systemic event for financing. But prior to that, you did nothing. You were like Texas on a little steroid. You went up and up, but you have so much land. Maybe that's what I determine in looking at Florida is that your ability to still have cheap prices is connected to you always have another 100 acres of ground. Here, that isn't usually true. You know, in Orange County, you're blocked in. It's going to go up or it's not going to happen. So it's just interesting. That's why I think I'm motivated just because I'm fascinated at the answer myself.
Well, and it doesn't mean that in quadrant two you can't invest here. You know, Greg did a great job of buying a trusty sale and really chasing the market down, and how fast it was moving. That was impressive.
That was it was. I mean, he knew it was going down 3% a month. So if we thought we had a 6 month hold, he was lowering the retail by 20% and then starting our formula.
And then on the appraisal side, all the issues he had with, you know, the only thing in Moreno Valley that were comps were REOs in rough shape. And they're like, we don't care you have granite countertops.
Well, you see, that's why, I mean, you really have to start thinking about, well, one of the best things we did for our loan business and for our clients was the ability to hold instead of flip. So create a loan program that was 5 years. Well, that made a lot of our clients wealthy because we didn't care that it was vacant at the time. And, you know, that's a hard money lender. But to be able to have the money side say, we'll loan it for 8 years or whatever it was in the beginning, that was a big deal. And that's why I'm excited about those types of loan programs in Florida because I don't think that's an unsafe loan at all.
Agree. Well, and at the end of quadrant two is when we launched the long-term program. It was an 8-year program at the time.
Right, because I knew we had a long ways to go from where we were. I didn't think there would be any risk at all having an 8-year loan at that point. And it allowed everyone to get to the upside, which it has. I mean, that's been great.
So quadrant two, you're working through a bust and probably that time sort of formulating your way back in. And then you land in quadrant three, which is sort of the bust to the flat market. So a 2009 to, what do you think, 2011, 2012?
No, I guess I would consider, you're right, that's a longer one, isn't
A
it? It
little
really
bit.
is. Got to be honest, we didn't crash that whole time. We kind of flattened, and there was a 2 or 3 year time, and that's unusual. Usually that flat period isn't so long, but this time it was.
Okay.
And so then what's interesting about that, there's certain types of ownership gets very hard. One of them is dirt. So if you're in 2006 and you're just so cocky about what you've got, you don't sell it. You're not feeling that way in 2012. You've just written 6 years of property taxes, clear the land of debris. You're sick of that. You get an offer, you get an option, you're going to pay attention to it because it's like the only soul that showed up. That's when I look at charts in for Florida, when I was interviewing Doug Duncan in the first quarter of 2015, that was what I saw was that foreclosure chart in Florida was off the charts. And I knew we could find land that was nothing.
Well, and I mean, I guess we're going to be talking about a California more perspective, but you never stopped investing in Florida. You've been investing in Florida since Hurricane Andrew.
That's right. I mean, that's what, 92? So,
yeah,
yeah, it's a
you've
long
been in and
time,
out of there.
25 years. I mean, Alex and I have spec new homes on an offer the whole time. But that was another unique opportunity where you had an isolated event where it was a massive hurricane, that there were ways that you could get tremendous deals without hurting a soul, which was amazing. And we have a chapter that's actually about that.
Yeah. But in quadrant three, when you're investing out of state, you brought a lot of your chips back. At that point, the prices had stabilized. The price drop had sort of stopped. So you started 1031 exchanging back into California.
Yeah, which was my game plan, always was. I wanted to do that. I wanted to sell at the peak, not just... And part of it was I didn't own the Mike Cantu inventory. I didn't.
Right.
I still didn't at the end of this cycle, which is why 1031 exchanged into what I now own, which I do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I own just very boring, really brand new... You know, it's like the only game in town for rental. It's brand new. I mean, that's just, I'm glad I've landed there.
Yeah. I guess I only done that once in my lifetime in New York City. I actually just wrote an article for Bigger Pockets that covered this. It ended up being illegal. Basement of a New York City apartment. Oh. It was an illegal basement space, and they didn't tell me the entire phone system for the building was in the basement. Anyway, my only experience living in something new and renting it. All right, so... Buying out of state, you're more prone to come back. Maybe you won't this time if another cycle went through.
No, I'm very happy. And the reason why is the reasoning behind where I am is demographics.
Okay.
Demographics. That where this is it happens to be Leesburg. Florida in general has lots of retired people. When retired people go from 65 to 85, the caretakers go from 2 to 7.
Yep.
So my renter is the nurse.
Yeah.
And... As they get older, I'm going to have more nurses to rent to.
Okay, that's fair enough. And then quadrant four, which we're at now, and you know that's why I wanted to cover that sort of the staying put, cashing out, or changing seats. So now we're in quadrant four. You're clearly doing that. You've changed inventory. It doesn't mean you've gotten rid of all your California stuff, but you're repositioning your C stuff to maybe B or A, or then completely out of state. And that's, I guess, when we start talking a little bit more about how are you selecting markets these days. Big Chefs Ahead was a great book.
Yeah.
Made me feel a lot more comfortable investing out of state.
Right.
and in the chapter, you do talk a lot about building a team. And how do you feel about the turnkey rental community? And would you utilize those services? I've never seen you do that.
No.
I've always seen you do your own homework.
Yeah. And part of it is just, you know, I feel like I want to deal with people that I know I can trust. And I just, I guess I feel comfortable with my ability to ask the questions that prove to me character or not character.
Okay.
So that's what I want. I'm going to be 3,000 miles away from my property manager in Florida. I've got to know he's going to make an honorable decision, not a right decision for, okay, let's make a one side decision for Bruce Norris. I don't want that guy. I might even give him a chance to prove that's who he is. He'll take advantage of somebody. So he gets my business. I don't want that guy. I want a guy that's going to say, no, I mean, we're going to treat like the tenant fair and oh, good. Okay. That's exactly what I want. You know, that's the kind of guy I want. But, I've been fortunate. Grand Junction was my first shot. And I was there 7 times, interviewed everybody that was a property manager personally, met realtors and all that, you know, got Mary Simpson, never changed. Mary Simpson did a great job. And I was a long ways away from Grand Junction.
Yeah.
And it was the most challenging market you could have. It was 50% vacant for 3 years. And it had nothing to do with her mismanagement. The whole city was gone.
Yeah.
And so what the heck? I mean, that was, she held her own until we got to a different rental market.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for now. VIP subscribers, you'll be able to log in a few weeks and check out Buying System 23, Buying Out of State, for the complete interview on the quadrants and how this system changes depending on the timing. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll put all this online and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. See you later.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.